Blog Talk Radio.
Kimberly, and this is Black Free Thinkers, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. Isn't that right, William?
Of course it is. Yeah, that's why he came up with it. Yes, because and this is the one where you can call in with 310-982-4273, and you can also Skype in, and then that little British accent will tell you to press 1 to speak with the host, because we walk by sight to see what makes your whole day glow, because faith is believing what you know ain't so. And we might talk about what we know is so about domestic terrorism and tyranny, lynch mobs, and vigilantes. I'm ready for a hungry episode here.
Oh, yes. This should be a very interesting episode. But before I get started, you know, I got to do the announcements, you know, be like the lady at church with the fan, because I got my fan going. I had to go buy me a new fan this week. I thought I was about to die. But anyway, the old fan was on his last leg. And I know it's winter. Yeah, it's cold up here, but I couldn't open the window. So, you know, we had to deal with the fan. Anyway. The day of solidarity for black non-believers. Yay! The day of solidarity for black non-believers. Everybody, that is coming up Sunday, February 24th, 2013. Again, Sunday, February 24th, 2013. If there are any groups in your area, and again, this is open to everybody. So this is not just for black non-believers. This is open to all non-believers. And if there are any groups in your area, ask them if they're planning to put on an event and have them send us their information. The email address is aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com. Again, aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com. They can inbox me, you know, on Facebook. All of our information is on the profile page. They can contact Donald Wright. Donald Wright is the founder of this. So contact Donald directly if you all know him, please, so we can get your information up there. We already have some information about a few cities. And, you know, I know Atlanta. Black non-believers from Atlanta, they have set their event. Metro Orlando, black non-believers of Metro Orlando, their event has been set. Chicago, we have our event. We're set. Houston has an event. We're set. So just, you know, I put the link in the room. I tumbled it out yesterday. I put it on my Facebook page. I'm going to hit it back up later on today. Put the information out there. You can also do a search on Facebook and find the actual page for the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers. But get your information in so that we can add it to the site. But in addition to that, even if there is no group in your area, if it's, you know, a couple of you all, get together. Go out, have some coffee, have some tea, have some milk, whatever, you know, just get together. We like pictures. If you want to send us your leftimonials, please do. You know, we like leftimonials. We want to know, you know, what your experience was when you left religion. For those that were in religion and left, you know, please send it in. Send your leftimonials in. We'd love to have it. You know, pictures, videos. We did a video last year. I think I'm going to add that to the site. And, you know, guys, come on. Send it in. Let us know how you're doing. Even if it's one person, you know, because I've had people say that they didn't have anyone to celebrate the day with. You know, even if you want to do a day of service, like I said, you know, if you want to pick up a broom and a shovel and clean up around the neighborhood, you know, you can turn it into a day of service, or you can volunteer some time. Like, I encourage people to go to the senior homes and, you know, maybe talk to some of the seniors, let them talk to you, or for those of you that want to make it a family night. You know, I keep saying break out the old Nintendos and Ataris. Yesterday, Raina said, why don't you all break out the old Monopoly games? Yeah, you can do that, too. You know, you can make it a family day. You know, let the kids read to you. You read to the babies, however that works there. Maybe that day you can make a special dinner for family. You know, send us pictures. Send us videos. We'd love to have it. And, again, you know, we encourage people to send in their leftimonials. So, again, that was the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers, February 24th. understand, again, it's not relegated to just larger groups. If you have a smaller group or if it's just a couple of friends that want to get together and kick the bobos, hey, that's fine too. So, you know, please go ahead. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do that. The telephone is 213-373-3938. Again, that's 213-373-3938. And, again, the contact, the national contact is Donald Wright. And his email address is aadayofsolidarity@yahoo.com, or you can send it to aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com. We got it covered on both ends. So, again, you know, let us know. You know, even if, like I said, if it's only one or two of you, that's fine. We want to know about it. We want to encourage you. For those that need a little publicity, please, you know, let us know. I had someone hit me up from Sacramento yesterday, and I encourage that individual to send the information to me. So, Sacramento, I'm waiting on your email. Please get it in. And this event is being sponsored by African Americans for Humanism, Black Atheists of America, Black Free Thinkers, Black Nonbelievers, and Black Skeptics of Los Angeles. And so, guys, you know, get out there. And also, for those of you that did not have a chance to contribute to the scholarship fund, Black Skeptics of Los Angeles, they were accepting donations, and they're still accepting donations for scholarship funds. And these scholarships will basically go out to LGBT youth that are homeless and foster children and just a variety of situations like that. But, you know, it's focusing on that particular sector of society, and it's for a worthy cause. And they have enough money to give out four $1,000 scholarships. So, you know, they're trying to, you know, take money in and, you know, just please, 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 we need to stand up. We need to stand up. Dr. Hutchison, Sikivu Hutchison, is doing a fantastic job out there, and now it's coming to fruition. See, we need for you guys to donate not only, you know, finances, but some time as well. We want to get these programs up and running, but we need you. We need you. Yes, you. So, you know, come on, let's step up, let's do it. I posted a video on my wall from Sikivu as well, in which she's talking about scientism. And, you know, we've been talking about social justice as well, but we need you guys. We do, we need you. And I'm telling you that, you know, if you give to an organization, we're transparent. And if someone isn't willing to be transparent, then you don't need to give them your money. You know, but we need, you know, your time. We need, you know, we just need your help so that we can start pushing this forward and so that we can start making an impact in the community. Because, I mean, look at that, four $1,000 scholarships. You know, for those of you that have gone to school, you know, $1,000, you know, $500 each semester, that goes a long way. That pays for books and, you know, some ramen noodles for you. So, you know, guys, please, please, please step up. Be counted, be counted. You know, it's important. It's extremely important that, you know, we get out here and we start helping one another. And, again, you know, the recipients of the scholarships, are coming from difficult situations, and this is going to help them quite a bit. So I just wanted to put that out there. Much love to those of you. You know, even if you can't give, just, you know, if you want to send her a note, you know, that would be great. Just some encouragement, and, you know, thank you so much. But, yay, we've come a long way. So, hey, here we go. This is Black Free Thinkers. And, again, we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And, man, today's topic should be interesting, but before we get into it, you know, I want to talk about a couple of other things, and then, you know, we'll ease our way into the mix. Oh, next week's show, you know, I'm forgetting to tell you all the important stuff. Next week's show, we're going to talk about Black, Latinos, Hispanics, mestizos, and the history. So the histories of, you know, Africans and all of the Americas, but in particular, you know, we're going to be talking about Latinos. So, you know, we're not going to forget the Dominicans. We're not going to forget the Cubanos. We're going to talk about all of that because there have been some issues happening over in Los Angeles, in particular East L.A., in which the La Raza, La Raca, They've been basically pushing blacks out of their neighborhoods. They've been threatening blacks. And it's just interesting. But, you know, I want to talk about the forgotten black Latino history. So we're going to talk about that. We're not going to be talking about the Olmecs. That's not where I'm going. But, you know, it should be very, very interesting. We're going to talk about the Moors in Portugal. We're going to talk a little bit about the conquistadors. We're going to talk a little bit about all of that. So just to kind of let you know, that's going to be a jam-packed show. And also on the show for next week, we'll have Donald Wright. He'll be on the show, and we'll be talking about the Day of Solidarity, because that show will be the week before the Day of Solidarity. So, you know, just kind of let you guys know you're in for a treat. And his book, The Only Prayer I'll Ever Pray Is Let My People Go. It's a very good book, guys. If you get a chance to go out there and read it and purchase it, it's well worth it. It's, you know, a short book. It's a very easy read, but it's packed with a lot of information, and it's just great. You know, you'll enjoy it. So just want to kind of let you guys know, you know, it's a lot of things coming up. The Day of Solidarity, that's Sunday. No show that Sunday. I may run an archive show, but in essence, there's no show that day. I want to make sure everybody has a chance to go out and enjoy their activities. And even if you don't go to one of the festivities put on by one of the larger groups, you can always, again, do something at home. You know, spend some time with your family, spend some time with your children. You know, maybe pick up one of these books and sit back and enjoy reading the book. You know, you have options here. But anyway, in the news. Interesting that we're talking about domestic terrorism and tyranny, lynch mobs, and vigilantes. There was a story that came out this week, and basically it was talking about how Ireland sent girls and women to Catholic workhouses until 1996. And, you know, basically, you know, these children were orphans and abused children. They were neglected and unruly children. And it was, wow. So, yeah, this is the Magdalene Laundries. And that was from 1922 to 1926. And it was horrible. But they had to apologize for that. In essence, these children and these women were put into slavery. You know, they sent them into slavery. And, you know, the government had to come back and apologize for that. And interestingly enough, Catholic Church, they were sent to Catholic workhouses. They used to wash the uniforms and, you know, all of that garb for the Catholic Church as well as different government entities. So, you know, again, when you have people saying that slavery does not exist, yeah, there's still slavery to this day. And these stories are starting to come out. And I'm sure when some of these women and children were released, you know, the ones that were released, when they would tell people about it, that, you know, people didn't believe them. And so, you know, I just say before we start dismissing everybody and dismissing everything, that we start looking at the bigger picture. Whenever any of these people would complain about the situation, basically they would be retaliated against. And it's horrible. It's horrible. So we need to pay attention to things like this. And, again, it goes back to a picture that I put on my wall, and it said, never forget, never, never, ever forget, you know, these atrocities that are happening and that have happened over the years. This next story, we can talk about it, but I'm only going to give it 10 minutes. And then I'm done with it. And that's Christopher Dorner. And, you know, it's, you know, what's happening out there in Los Angeles. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, Christopher Dorner is a former military, former police officer man. And apparently he witnessed another officer physically abuse or use excessive force on a mentally ill you know, perpetrator, if you will, or they were calling that person a perpetrator. And he reported it. The police board decided it was an unfounded accusation and then terminated him for making an unfounded allegation, even though the young man, or I'm not sure if it's the young man, the perpetrator, testified that, you know, they were abused or hit by the cops. And the perpetrator's father also stated that. And it's just the whole thing, you know, I'm not even sure what to tell you guys. You know, I don't know what to make of the situation. What the media is doing is they're framing the narrative in such a way that if you sympathize or empathize with this guy in any way whatsoever, they're trying to frame it and make it seem as though you are condoning murder. Now, I know I do not condone the actions of that gentleman. And, you know, I haven't spoken to anyone who condones, you know, him murdering people. You know, however, I've lived enough to know and to see and experience, you know, how some of these companies will retaliate against you for reporting actions. You know, if you're a whistleblower in any respect, they will come after you and they will find a way to get rid of you. So, you know, again, we've talked about how in some cases the victim is re-victimized. And I'm not calling him a victim per se, but, you know, reading these different stories, his partner was saying that he needed some additional training. He made some requests asking for additional training to be sent back to the academy, and it was declined every time. You know, and this is according to different stories that have come out, according to, you know, parts of his manifesto. The whole situation is disturbing. It's very disturbing. But what I will say is, you know, this definitely needs to be investigated. The LAPD is claiming that they're, you know, reopening, you know, his case and they're going to review it. But how are they going to review a case about themselves? You know, so, you know, I believe the Department of Justice probably needs to come in and review all of that information. But that's just me, you know, and I think that it needs to be addressed. And, you know, I just do not think that this is going to end well. I don't believe this is going to end well. And, you know, for the people, the innocent bystanders that are being hurt and victimized in Los Angeles, because, you know, he has the LAPD so shook that they're shooting innocent bystanders and just shooting up into trucks, you know, shoot now, ask questions later. So, you know, I feel bad for the people that are being hurt in the meantime because, you know, it's just showing that this paranoia is running deep. So, you know, that was our little lesson on domestic terrorism. I gave it a few minutes. Anything you want to add, William?
Oh, geez. Yeah, that internal investigation business, that's something that's always sounded funky to me since I first, you know, started reading newspapers in elementary school. Like, what? So these guys, they, like, the police have to put themselves in trouble? Are they really going to do that? It's just like when they... when they shoot somebody and they get a paid administrative leave. Like, well, that just sounds like a paid vacation to me. Like, that sounds like a reward. Like, it's suspicious language, suspicious behavior.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, LAPD did what I've seen happen in a lot of different corporations. People that cause problems, you know, the fuck-ups, they get promoted up and out the way. And the people that are extremely competent are left in, you know, doing grunt work because they know how to do it. They know how to do it efficiently, and they know how to do it correctly. Is that fair? No. You know, but it happens. And so, you know, it's interesting looking at all of that, and I know, but guys, you need to read this. You need to look at this whole situation. Look at it with an open mind. And again, I'm not, you know, taking anyone's side, but what I am saying is I truly believe there is more to the situation than what meets the eye. And hopefully it will come out because, you know, he was stating about how some of the officers that abused Rodney King, you know, not only were they acquitted, but now they've been promoted to supervisory, you know, positions. And, you know, we just have to stay on top of that. You know, where are our activists? Where are you? Where are you? You don't have to wait for Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. And even with them, I say follow the money. But, you know, I know they've had some protests in Los Angeles, but, you know, they need our support as well. So that's all of us. We need to support one another like we used to because look at what's happening. You know, I'm going to talk about Rosewood and Tulsa today and, you know, talk about how some black wealth, well, quite a bit of black wealth was eliminated and tell you how it happened. And but that just happened again. Between 2001 and 2009, you know, a lot of the wealth that was acquired by blacks was totally snatched from under us. You know, and yet no banker has been sent to jail. And, you know, it's just, it's horrible what has happened. And, you know, it needs to be investigated. And as someone said before, you know, why isn't Barack Obama, you know, issuing a commission to go in and investigate what happened? But, you know, I'm not sure what's happening with President Obama and some of this, and I don't even really want to get into it right now. But anyway, so, yeah, we need to get out here. We need to support one another. We need to get the issues on the table, put together an agenda, and move forward. But today we are talking about domestic terrorism, tyranny, lynch mobs and vigilantes. And before we get started, let's try to define some of this terminology. And basically, a domestic terrorist is, or domestic terrorism is terrorism practiced in your own country against your own people. Okay, so it's something that, you know, that's practiced in your own country against your own people. And this is something that's not new to the American public. Tyranny is oppressive power exerted by government. It can be arbitrary and unrestrained exercise of power or despotic abuse of authority. So that part doesn't necessarily apply to government, but I just think it's important that you understand the definition, you know, of that. And lynch mob. You know, the definition of a lynch mob is a mob that kills a person for some presumed offense without legal authority. Okay? So that is what a lynch mob is. And I'm going to define lynching. Lynching is the practice of killing people by extrajudicial mob action occurred in the United States chiefly from the late 18th century through the 1960s. Now, I kind of disagree with that because look at what happened in Jasper, Texas. When was that? That was in 2000-something. I apologize for not having the facts in front of me. But when they took that African-American gentleman and attached him to the truck and drove until his body just, you know, started dismembering. So, you know, there's still a lot of, that mentality, you know, in this country. And we definitely need to address it. It's just interesting. We can go ahead and define mob action. Basically, let's see here, I'm going to give you the legal definition of mob action. It says a disturbance of the peace by several persons assembled and acting with a common intent in executing a lawful or unlawful enterprise in a violent and turbulent manner. So, again, we're defining, you know, some terminology here so that you all can have, you know, an understanding of just the basics before we get into it. You know, it's just as interesting, you know, the history in this country. Vigilante, okay? Vigilante, the definition of that is a member of a volunteer committee organized to suppress and punish crime summarily as when the processes of law are viewed as inadequate. So a self-appointed doer of justice. Now, you know, it's quite a bit that that I want to go over today and that I want to talk about. Now, you know, we're going to hear from some people who are going to say, well, black people weren't the only ones lynched. And that's true. But we were 75%. So, you know, that makes a big difference, you know, and that's not to discount, you know, other people that were lynched because there were quite a few. But, again, you know, we constituted 75% of, you know, this wrath, if you will, and the actions of others who decided to come out and, you know, terrorize us. You know, so you're saying who? Who terrorized the black community and why? Well, I can't necessarily tell you why because, you know, I'm not necessarily in their minds. And, you know, there are different theories out there, but, you know, you have the Ku Klux Klan. You know, you had a variety of different people, but mainly the Ku Klux Klan and, you know, what they call night riders, okay? So the term night riding is basically synonymous with white capping and bald knobbing. And, you know, it's acts of violence targeting select groups and carried out by vigilantes under cover of night or disguise. And so, you know, this has been happening for a while, all the way back to, you know, they say post-Reconstruction. But I believe it was happening before then. I believe that, you know, but anyway, I won't even get into all of what I believe. But, you know, we need to go back and we need to understand, you know, in the state of Washington in the 1920s, there was a long history with the Ku Klux Klan and the Washington State Klan. During the 1920s, you know, they were terrorizing, you know, and it was built under patriotism. You know, quite a few of them, you know, feel that, you know, oh, interesting. it was built under patriotism. And so, again, you know, go back and do some history, do some reading on this. The antithesis, you know, to the Night Riders are the Freedom Riders. And the Freedom Riders were civil rights activists, you know, who rode, you know, interstate buses into segregated southern cities. And basically they would come against, you know, the Night Riders and basically try to combat that and give some encouragement and some lessons and basically protection to the blacks. The Freedom Riders began March 4th, 1961, and they were led by James Farmer. And 13 riders, 7 black, 6 white, they left D.C. on Greyhound buses, and they rode through Virginia, the Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. It ended in New Orleans, and, you know, there was a civil rights rally, where it was planned anyway. And, again, you know, you got to go back and read some of the history, you know, just to kind of give you an idea of what the newspapers were reporting then. the Montgomery Advertiser on August 25th, 1913. The headline was, Negro half-wit is lynched, threatened to lynch whites. And this was in Birmingham, Alabama, August 25th, and Deputy Sheriff Dave Kennebrook today reported the lynching of Wilson Gardner, a young Negro half-wit who was found Sunday hanging by a belt. Gardner has gone around to the homes of white miners near Kilgore, carrying a rope and threatening to hang them. This disturbed the miners, who beat the half-wit to death before hoisting his corpse to a railroad trestle. You know, you have one from Albany, New York. Knickerbocker Press, August 28, 1913. Lynch Negro cleared. Now, how can you clear someone that's already been lynched?
Yeah, that's the idea
how that works, William?
They got permission to do it? Like, we're cleared to lynch this negra. Like, I don't know how they come up with that wording so casual about it. I'm having a tough time here. You see me popping in and out of the chat room. This computer will not stop freezing trying to get these stories up. And yeah, that's a pass and a half-wit. Like, yeah, it's really apathetic to another member of the species, you know?
Exactly. But with that title there, with the lynch Negro cleared, this was in Greenville, Georgia on August 27th. Virgil Swanson, the Negro lynched near here Monday as the murderer of L.C. Marchman. A wealthy planter was innocent as citizens who tried to save the Negro from the mob contended. Swanson's innocence was proved today when Walter Brewster, another Negro, was arrested and convinced that he killed Marchman in a dispute about rent. How about that? It happens. There's a story of a gentleman by the name of Jesse Binga. And basically, he rose from poverty to become the wealthiest African-American entrepreneur and banker in Chicago in the late 19th century. And this earned him a reputation all over the U.S. as being, the wealthiest, businessman. And basically, he came from Ontario, Canada. Just kind of give you some, of the history there. But he came from, Ontario, Canada. He owned a bunch of property in Rochester and Detroit. He dropped out of high school and collected rent on his mother's property in Detroit. He later moved to Seattle and Tacoma, Washington, then Oakland, California. Worked as a barber in each city, and he was also a Pullman porter. And, he acquired properties all over the place, Pocatello, Idaho, he sold and made a profit from it. He came to Chicago in 1893, and basically what happened was within 3 years, he had deposits of over $1.3 million. And he owned quite a bit of the south side of Chicago. And it was just interesting, but he was also a philanthropist. So he gave a lot of money back. And in 1929, he opened an office building. And it was a five-story office building. And they said it was very, very tastefully decorated. And at the corner of 35th and State, which, if you all know that area now, IIT is there. But anyway, he was extremely successful. His home was firebombed five times in 1919 because the white families wanted him to move. He moved into, an area that did not have any blacks, and apparently they did not want any blacks living there. But basically, they firebombed him to get him to leave the neighborhood. He faced some challenges during the Depression, but eventually they got a case on him. I'm not sure. I haven't done a lot of research into this, but what I believe is, they got a case on him, whether it was warranted or not, I'm not quite sure, but he went to jail. And when he was released from jail, he went to work for a church making, you know, basically nothing. You know, he was, I think he was making like $15 a week, and he died poor. You know, it says here that they convicted him of embezzling $22,000 from bank funds. Now, you know, he had over $1 million in bank deposits, but he embezzled $22,000, according to them, and went to jail, came out, was working for $15 a week at a church, and died poor. You know, it's just amazing, you know, some of the things that have happened. You know, but I thought it was important for you all to know about that. And also, when you get a chance, look up the Lynch Quilt Project. I also put that on my wall as well. The Lynch Quilt Project, with Shonda Crow Storm, is putting that together. I found that story quite interesting, and I think that you all would enjoy it. But, you know, again, going over, let's, you know, talk a little bit about Rosewood. And that's the reason why I led into the story about Jesse Binga, because, you know, he was wealthy. He had acquired his wealth honestly. You know, not everybody was acquiring their wealth honestly back then. You know, there were some families that acquired their wealth off of prohibition, which was illegal. But that's another story. But basically, the Rosewood Massacre, you know, talking about, you know, the first week of January of 1923, and this was in Florida. For those who aren't familiar, Rosewood is in Florida, and there was a movie made about this situation. Did you see that, William?
That movie, I didn't watch it. Like, I saw, like, just the first couple of minutes, and I was like, this isn't for me. But I was like 15 or 16 at that time. Like, maybe I should watch it as an adult. But at that age, I was like, what's going on here? I skipped it.
Exactly. And it's a very good movie if you all haven't had a chance to go out and enjoy this movie. But basically, you know, Rosewood was a quiet, you know, predominantly black town. And basically, a white woman made an accusation that, how can I put it? She made an accusation that caused some black men to, you know, be hurt. And, you know, a group of white men from nearby towns, they lynched that black man. And, you know, the black citizens of Rosewood, they tried to defend themselves from further attack, you know, but several hundred whites, you know, came through the countryside hunting for black people and burned almost every structure in Rosewood. And the people, the survivors, you know, they had to hide out in the swamp and, you know, try to catch trains and, you know, carpool, if you will, to larger towns to get away, you know. And the authorities, they knew what was happening. They knew the violence that were, but nobody was arrested. And the town was basically abandoned. And, you know, I hear these stories and I see these things, and, you know, it angers me. And it's just interesting because sometimes I'll see people say some things, and I'm like, do you know where that came from? Because, you know, I'll see people saying things like, oh, this person needs to be burned, or they need to be barbecued, or what have you. Do you know where that came from? Do you know where that came from? Because if you go and you look at some of the old photos and read some of the information, and they even had postcards. There were postcards out there that would show, you know, public burnings of bodies. And, you know, the public burning of a Negro was known as a Negro barbecue, reinforcing the perceptions of blacks as less than human. Now, you know, I bought a book, and I would, you know, if you have the money, and because it's kind of expensive, but it's a book called Without Sanctuary. And it's actually a very good book. It's talking about, it's lynching photography in America. And I kind of had to brace myself when I started reading this book. You know, some of the pictures are violent, and it's, you know, it will turn your stomach. But, yeah, your Negro barbecue. So when you hear people say, oh, he needs to be burned or she needs to be burned, this is where that's coming from. You know, people were burned at the stake. This isn't something that just happened with the Inquisition, you know, the Crusades, you know. It didn't just happen then. It's happening, you know, it's happened now. The name of the book, here, I'll put the link in the room, but the name of the book, for those who aren't in the room, is Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America. And it's a very good book. I just say go out, check it out. It's expensive. But it's a big book. It's a heavy book. It's a lot of information. And it shows you, you know, the people hanging from the bridges, the people hanging from, you know, the trees, people being burned alive. You know, it's sickening. But in order for us to be able to move forward in this country, we need to talk about these things. We need to talk about what has happened in this country and what continues to happen. You know, racism isn't necessarily dead. And for the people who think we live in a post-racial society, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Another book that I would suggest that you guys go out and check out is called 100 Years of Lynchings by Ralph Ginsberg. 100 Years of Lynchings by Ralph Ginsberg. I'll post that link in the room as well. But, you know, we need to know this history. We need to know what's happening. But in addition to that, you guys, they were sending pictures of these, you know, number one, they had the headlines in the newspapers, but they would take those pictures in those headlines and they would make postcards and send the postcards to one another. If you go on Amazon and look some of this information up, you'll see the postcards, and they sell for a lot of money. It sells for a lot of money. And, you know, again, you know, when I hear other blacks using some of this terminology and not exactly knowing where it's coming from and what these people mean by it, you know, it kind of sickens me. And it's just as important that we understand the history behind, you know, all of this here. We talked a little bit about, you know, those with their... But what about Greenwood, you know, and that's Wall Street, the Black Wall Street. And basically in 1921, Greenwood, a successful all-black enclave in Tulsa, Oklahoma, was the site of the deadliest race riot in U.S. history. You know, Black Wall Street. These people were extremely successful. It was wealthy. It was a prominent town. It was an all-black Tulsa enclave. A lawyer and businessman in Stratford, he owned a 65-room hotel that sat right in the heart of the thriving community that would later be known as the Black Wall Street. But on May 31st, 1921, you know, they pretty much came in and arrested a young black man on a questionable charge of assaulting a young white woman, and it just touched off a race riot, you know. And white mobs came in, and it's just, they attacked them. You know, they retaliated against that offense, and they left 300 people dead and another 10,000 black residents homeless and 35 city blocks in ruin. And so, you know, it's just interesting because it's a lot more that you can learn from that. But when they get angry at us during that time, they would come to our communities and burn it down. And then it's just, and most of these people were not brought to justice. You know, quite a few black men were charged with inciting the riot. Now, how are they inciting a riot if they're in their own neighborhood, in their own city, minding their own business, but you had a white mob come in and attack you? Were they just supposed to allow the white mob to go through the city and do as they please and not defend their property and their livelihoods and themselves and their family? So, you know, go back and read that. There's a book called Black Wall Street, From Riot to Renaissance in Tulsa's Historic Greenwood. And, you know, apparently it was like a black mecca. And you know, everybody was trying to move there because it was so prosperous. And, you know, they tore it down in one day. In one day, you know, a lot of rage, and you know, basically, you know, the young man, his name was Dick Rowland, 19-year-old man, and he was never charged. The young lady, her name was Sarah Page, and she was 17, and she was a store clerk, and basically. It's just, he was never charged up. It just seems as though, you know, there was just a lot of jealousy there. A lot of jealousy and false accusations and mischaracterizations there. But it's interesting, you know, how this history came about. But we have a gentle rain that wants to join us now. And I'll get back to this, but let's see what Gentle Rain has to say.
Guys, it's me.
Oh, oh. Hey, it's Raina. Okay. No, I'm just laughing because, you know, the other day I was saying when, you know, when people call the show and want to troll, they never have any nice names like Misty Rain do. Or...
Oh, yeah.
Well,
that is really true. That's pretty funny.
Right. So, you know, just.
No, and I was going to. You've kind of gone way past the point where interjecting this would make sense. So I'm not going to say what I was going to say. But I am enjoying the show. You know, it's. And you talking about Rosewood and Tulsa, you know, and all of these other things, you know, you know, these things were not, the thing about it that most people I don't think understand is these things didn't happen that long ago.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Some of us have grandparents who were there.
Exactly. And some of our families, some of us have families that have still, that are still suffering from that stolen wealth.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, in addition to Rosewood and Tulsa, let's talk about Orangeburg. You know, a lot of people know about Orangeburg. You know, this happened on February 8th, 1968. And basically, you know, you had some African-Americans that went to school, South Carolina State College, which is a HBCU, and they wanted to go bowling. And they protested against segregation at a bowling alley. Well, guess what? 3 men were killed and 28 people were injured. And most of the victims were shot in the back. And one of the people injured was a pregnant woman. She miscarried her baby a week later. And it was the first time such an unrest on a university campus resulted in the death of protesters. All because they wanted to go bowling. You know... You know, and it's just, you know, this happened before the Jackson State killings. You know, you all may want to go and do some research on that. Jackson State over in Mississippi. You know, it's important that you guys understand that as well. Oh, I'm laughing. Rob, you're talking about I sound like I'm in a stadium. That's my new fan. my new gotta have a fan. But it's interesting. But you know, with this here, you know, go back and read. You know, they couldn't go into the bowling alley, and it was the only bowling alley in town. And you know, the students protested, and they were turned away. And you know, in the next couple of days, they had about 200, you know, students or close to 200. You know, gathered on the campus, you know, to demonstrate against the continued segregation, you know, of the bowling alley. But quite a few people, you know, were hurt. And the governor said the event was one of the saddest days in the history of South Carolina. And he blamed the deaths on outside Black Power agitators and said the incident took place off campus, contrary to the evidence.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a book that was written about it, and it was called The River of No Return, The Autobiography of a Black Militant and the Life and Death of SNCC. So go out and see, because I'm going to see if I can find that book. But, yeah, you know, three young men die. You know, Samuel Hammond, Delano Herman Middleton, Henry Ezekiel Smith, and it's just, it's important that you guys understand and know your history. And, you know, this can happen today. You know, and I'm sure that there are incidents, but I didn't look it up because, you know, it's hard enough talking about these issues without getting too upset. And we're going to be talking about things like this all year. So, you know, get ready because I'm not going to let this go. Since people think that, you know, Black History Month is a bust and we shouldn't celebrate it, I decided I'm going to celebrate Black History all year. How about that? So.
Yeah.
You know.
Do it. Yes. Yeah, there's people, I notice in, like, some of these conversations that you see online floating around the social networks, like, when one of these subjects will come up, there's always going to be at least that one person who comes in who doesn't object to it. They don't disagree. They just don't want you to talk about it. Just stop having that conversation. They're like, you know, I don't find Skittles interesting, so I don't want you to talk about Skittles. Because my granddad had Starburst, and we had the Starburst struggle, so we don't want you talking about your Skittles. And it's like, at some point, you just have to say, no, we're going to have this conversation, and you can join if you'd like, or you can keep walking. And yeah, don't let them stop you from talking about it.
Exactly, because we need to talk about this. This is the only way that we're going to be able to heal from this and to be able to move on. And I also want to clear up another misconception. A lot of people think that it was only Black men that were lynched. No, there are quite a few Black women that were lynched as well. You have Jenny Steers, okay? Jenny Steers, on July 25th, 1903, a mob lynched Jenny Steers on the Beard Plantation in Louisiana for supposedly giving a white teenager, 16-year-old Elizabeth Dolan, a glass of poisoned lemonade. Before they killed her, the mob tried to force her to confess, but she refused and was hanged. And you find that story in 100 Years of Lynching with Ralph Ginsberg, the book that I posted the link for. Poisoned lemonade? Now, who drank it to determine if it was poisoned or not? If it was really poisoned, they should have just made her drink it.
Yeah, and did they give anything else? Like, did the person who said they were poisoned, what, did they die? Did they just get sick? Did they add anything else there?
I don't know. They didn't have too much anything more. She probably was just paranoid. But the thing is, if it was poisoned lemonade and the woman allegedly gave it to the young girl, why did they just make the woman drink it? If it was poisoned, she wouldn't have drank it.
Or did we just feel like lynching today? You know, we hadn't done a lynching since Tuesday. We got to get one in before the weekend.
Got to get ready for you. But anyway, I'm laid out alone. But we have Laura Nelson, right? All right. So with Laura Nelson, she was lynched on May 23rd, 1911 in Oklahoma. Now, you know, it has these names of these cities, but I am known for killing the names of these cities and killing people's names. But we'll give it a chance. Okleski, Oklahoma. And it says, right, and her 15-year-old son was also lynched at the same time, but they couldn't find a photo of her son. But basically, the photograph of Nelson was drawn from a postcard, and authorities accused her of killing a deputy sheriff who supposedly stumbled on some stolen goods in her house. Why they lynched her child is a mystery. The mob raped and dragged Nelson 6 miles to the Canadian River and hanged her from a bridge. Now, if you've seen the photo, you know, you'll see the woman. She has a dress on, the trees, and she's just hanging from there. And I've seen, you know, this photo in quite a few different places. When you all see these pictures, if you don't know where they came from, try to do a little research on them. You know, the young lady in the Norman Rockwell painting that I talked about the other day, you know, that was the first African-American young woman to be admitted to that particular school. There is some symbolism in these paintings, in these pictures. So go and look that up. The source for that is NAACP, 100 Years of Lynching in the U.S., 1889 through 1918. And you have Anne Barksdale, or Anne Bostwick. And the lynchers maintain that Anne Barksdale or Anne Bostwick killed her female employer in Pinehurst, Georgia, on June 24, 1912. Nobody knows if or why Barksdale killed her employer because there was no trial and no one thought to take a statement from this black woman who authorities claimed had violent fits of insanity and should have been placed in a hospital. Nobody was arrested, and the crowd was in a festive mood, placed in a car with a rope around her neck and at the other end tied to a tree limb. The lynchers drove at a high speed, and she was strangled to death. For good measure, the mob shot her eyes out and shot enough bullets into her body that she was cut in two. Oh, so I guess
that's
what we can do with the high-capacity magazines, right?
Yeah, now they gotta regulate cars. You gotta make a rule that you can't drag black people from your cars. Of course, they did that in 1998, didn't they, with James Byrd, with
yeah.
Jasper, Texas. What's the spelling of that one? Anne Barksdale.
Yeah, Barksdale Bostwick. You know, apparently she went by a couple of last names there, but B A R K S. D-A-L-E, D-A-R-K-S-D-A-L-E, first name is Ann.
There we go.
Right. And, you know, you have Marie Scott. You know, Marie Scott, you know, this was March 31st, 1914. And a white mob of at least a dozen males yanked 17-year-old Marie Scott from jail, threw a rope over her head as she screamed and hanged her from a telephone pole in Wagoner County, Oklahoma. And says what happened? Two drunk white men barged into her house as she was dressing. They locked themselves in her room and criminally assaulted her. Her brother apparently heard her screams for help, kicked down a door, killed one assailant, and fled. Some accounts state that the assailant was stabbed and basically, because they couldn't find her brother and lynch him, they decided to lynch her after they criminally assaulted her.
Ugh.
Funny how that works. Just, but I mean, here we go. They wanted blood. But I'm sure it was all, well, I won't even get into that because we're not talking about that right now. But, again, you know, it's important for, you know, for you guys to know and to understand what's happening here and what has happened over the years. This is just, it's disheartening. It's disheartening. And the thing is that, you know, going back to what William was saying earlier, and, you know, we've had discussions with, you know, different ones of us at different times about how there's this culture of silence when it comes to these things. You'll have some people saying, oh, it hurts too much to talk about that, or that was the past, we need to let it go, we need to forgive and forget. And, you know, you'll have people using scriptures about throw it into the sea of forgetfulness. No, never forget. Never forget.
Yeah, keep in mind, who gets told to forget something? Like, they tell you to forget about this while you're standing next to a guy with a Confederate flag T-shirt on. Why aren't you telling him to forget about that? Like, yeah, who was being told to be silent and forget about it?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, and, you know, the whole thing is, like I said, it's disheartening. It really is, because, you know, they don't tell Jewish people to forget about the Holocaust. They told people never to forget about, you know, 9/11, never to forget about the Titanic. But when it comes to blacks and slaves, and I put this picture up on the wall, but when it comes to, you know, slavery and Jim Crow and, you know, the black codes and everything that we've been through and some of the things that we continue to go through, we're told to get over it. How does that work? We're told to forgive and forget. And then the Bible is wielded as a weapon. Go ahead, honey.
Yeah, they want to control exactly which history of ours they want to be relevant. Like we were saying a couple minutes before the show started, we were talking about when you were going over all those black inventors of all that cool stuff that is still relevant. Caller ID just comes with my phone. But what are they telling the kids right now in Black History Month? Peanut butter. They invented peanut butter. Like, they want to make that thing, well, it's most relevant, that I have not had in the house since 2008. Forget peanut butter.
Down here, Granny.
I'm down here,
I know, and I saw you. I said I'm sitting down here. I was waiting on my laundry. I'm actually getting ready to go get it out of the dryer now.
That's a strong argument.
But so, you know, it's important that, you know, we understand that. I'm going to leave the women alone for a minute and, you know, get back with the women that were lynched. But, you know, I want to talk about Henry Smith, you know, and Henry Smith, you know, he was tortured and murdered in public. And basically, you know, it was promoted. And this happened on February 1st, 1893, at the Paris Fairgrounds in Paris, Texas. And basically, he was accused of the brutal murder of 3-year-old Martle Vance, the daughter of a policeman known for mistreating black prisoners. And basically, or mistreating prisoners, he was among those who had previously been beaten by Myrtle's father after he had been arrested for drunkenness. And, you know, I guess he was a handyman and a known alcoholic. And basically, Smith allegedly picked up little Myrtle Vance near the residence and carried her through the central portion of the city. And several people had asked him what he was doing with the child. And, you know, some kind of way the child was murdered, and they decided that he must have committed the crime after the body was found. And, again, the mob went after him. You know, he escaped to Hope, Arkansas. But basically they captured him and brought him back, and then a mob of an estimated 10,000 whites placed him on a carnival float and carried him through town and into the prairie. And then he was placed on a scaffold and tortured for 50 minutes by members of the girl's family, who thrust hot iron brands into his flesh, starting with his feet and legs, and started working upward towards his head. And it's just, it's horrible. It's horrible, you know, what this man went through. And they killed him. You know, and every time his body contorted, they said the mob cheered. And they said hot irons were thrust through his eye sockets and down his throat. Afterwards, he was still breathing. And then a crowd poured oil on him and set him on fire. Another Negro barbecue, right?
Yeah, and I think now you're getting my brain going on why some of that stuff wants to be somebody would want that kept quiet. Because as someone who was barbecued, might be somewhere along in my bloodline, and I got that dude's nose and ears and what have you, the person who was doing the barbecuing might be in your bloodline, And maybe that's why you don't want me talking about that, because that might, you know, it besmirches your granddaddy's character. But that's who he was. And it's like, I mean, accept it. You're not doing it today. Accept that your granddaddy was a, he was a chef. All right?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's horrible, some of this history here. Give them the telephone number again, William.
That's 310-982-4273 to get through. After I made the track, it's hard not to say it like that. Yeah.
And, yes, and William does our outro. You know, we have a new tune that we play closing out each show, and William put together this track, and, you know, extremely talented young man, and it's just, it's a privilege and an honor, you know, to call him friend. So, you know, I appreciate you, dear. I really, really do. And, but yeah, guys, you know, we need to, we need to address this issue. You know, that's one of the issues with this country, why we're not able to move forward in the ways that we need to, is, you know, both sides seem to be afraid to talk about race and race relations in the past. And we need to talk about that because, you know, look at what's happening now. Again, you know, we've had some trolls calling the show, which is fine. You know, that's any show. But we've had some, you know, when I would question, you know, that day on your show, William, when the gentleman said, well, we need the high-capacity magazines. And I'm like, why? If you use that to shoot at a deer, it won't be any deer meat left. Or you'll cook him before you had a chance to, you know, the skin.
Yeah.
And
like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
And I noticed something that is ingrained in him and a lot like him, where you notice he felt that he had a natural authority to say, okay, you guys are black people, so this is what you need to do. And it's like he didn't wake up that morning with that mentality. That was passed down from generation to generation, that he can walk into a conversation with black people. And remember, the subject of that was empathy for people who got accidentally harmed at the gun shows. And he came in just to want to change the subject and say, you blacks need to like guns because I'm telling you why. And, of course, it started with a sentence that never has anything good following it. I am a libertarian. That sentence, as soon as you hear that, you're like, ah, facepalm.
Right, but let's just call it what it is. It's called white privilege.
Yeah.
And let me define that. You know, white privilege refers to what some individuals perceive as advantages that white people enjoy in certain society beyond those commonly experienced by people of color in the same social, political, economic spaces, nation, community, workspace, income, etc. You know, and it says here the controversial term connotes both obvious and less obvious unspoken advantages that white individuals may not recognize that they have. These include cultural affirmations of one's own worth, greater presumed social status, and freedom to move, buy, work, play, and speak freely. The concept of white privilege also implies the right to assume the universality of one's own experience, marking others as different or exceptional, while perceiving oneself as normal. It can be compared and or combined with the concept of male privilege. You know, we need to talk about patriarchy and paternalism and all of that. It's just interesting, but, you know, you have white privilege, you have white insecurity, right? And,
yeah,
this is not going to be popular, but, you know, there's quite a bit of that out there, and that's part of the reason why we're having some of the issues we're having today, because, you know, the security that many whites used to enjoy, that is no longer there, especially when you have, you know, the manufacturing jobs and other jobs being shipped to other countries. You know, and look up xenophobia, too. You know, the fear of anything that's different than yourself. But look up xenophobia. But a lot of these jobs, a lot of these opportunities that were once a given in this country, they are no longer there. And I mean, so you know, it's just, ooh wee. We need to understand what's happening here. I just posted a link to some newspaper clippings, and we need to talk about it. But, you know, guys, you know, do some reading, do some research, do some reading. I see we have Eric on the line. Hey, Eric. I don't know
Eric.
If Eric missed the press one. Eric code 601?
Ken.
How you doing?
Hello.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm just listening to your show, and, you know, I started to call in and joke with you for a few minutes, but you already had a troll call in from what you're saying, so that position was already taken. So, but I do want to say, you know, you're doing a good job. You know how we talk about it all the time, and you've seen it in different aspects, and we've talked about this before, that the moment you start talking about it, and the young brother that was just talking, the moment you start talking about history, and especially black history, you always find that there's at least one person that comes up and they'll try to stop you from talking about it. If you talk about planning and reorganizing, they'll try to stop you, and you know, it's always the red herring. They'll throw something in that's totally irrelevant and throw you off to keep you from really putting the pieces together. But I commend you for taking up the mantle and actually being willing to talk about it and put it in its proper perspective, because plenty of people died for just having a skin color that's different. You know, like you said, there are people that were just drug out of their houses and lynched for no particular reason. These people actually celebrate it. If you look at some of those pictures that you were talking about, you can see them. They were outside. They had their food. They were, you know, they barbecued while they barbecued the black person.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I just call, and there's a wide wealth, and like you mentioned earlier to people, do your research, do your history. You don't have to just focus on the lynching part, because we have a wealth of history that goes on, but you
right.
need to know why they don't want you to talk about it. You need to know why it's so hard, because it deals with the fact that if they had to admit what was going on, it means that, you know, they have to fully acknowledge the bad part that they did.
Exactly.
And we need to start doing that as well. So that's pretty much what I want to say. I just want to say thank you for doing this show, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Eric. And Eric has a show on Blog Talk Radio called Common Sense Conversations. Eric is a friend of the show, so, you know, definitely check him out. In the chat room here, we have someone here. They said, America is the only country that never decolonized. The independence movement around the world during decolonization was an indigenous movement. The U.S. is the only country where a political faction of the colonizer declared independence, and that makes the U.S. a colonial government. And she's spot on. She's definitely spot on there. And going back to what you just said, Eric, you know, the Tuskegee Institute has recorded 3,446 blacks and 1,297 whites were lynched between 1882 and 1968. You know, and again, you know, we have to go beyond 68 because, again, someone told me it was James Byrd, the gentleman that was killed in 1998 by being drugged behind a truck. And, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, he brought up James Byrd. But I also want to point out that there have been, in recent, as far as the last couple of years, there have been some serious lynchings, and going back even in Mississippi, where they found people hung in a tree. There was one particular incident in Greenwood, Mississippi, if I'm not mistaken, happened about maybe 2 years ago. They said that this guy supposedly was mentally depressed, and what he did was he hung himself from a tree. But everyone is saying, you know, that didn't seem like, one, it didn't seem like the person. Two, it's just odd that he did it, period. You know, but they've had these situations. And now there's a string of people, white teens and white men running over black men in Mississippi. Like, just they're
yep.
walking on the side. This happened at least two or three times already. So
exactly.
I would say that things hadn't changed that much. They've just kind of, they don't really report them like they used to and put them in the light that they used to put it into. So,
exactly.
know, there's a lot
you're
of
right.
information.
Yeah, it's a lot of modern-day lynchings happening. And, Raina, you're back on the line here. And, you know, it happens, you know, quite a bit. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of this stuff is hidden. And, you know, I just decided that this year I was going to start pulling, you know, that information out. You know, next week we're going to talk about, you know, Africans and, you know, Latin America and, you know, the other African Americans, if you will. And
yeah.
the week after the Day of Solidarity, because on the Day of Solidarity is no show, but the week after that, we're going to talk about forgotten black history or lost black history. I want you all to look up, well, no, I'll let it be a surprise. But, you know, but you know, it's a lot of information that has been hidden. It's a lot of information that people don't know about, and that's why I had to bring up the Negro barbecue thing so that people will know, you know, where that came from. And so when you hear people say, well, burn them, or, you know, it, you need to know where that's coming from, you know, and
yeah.
what these people mean. You know, in I'll read another newspaper headline here. In the Montgomery Advertiser, October 23rd, 1913, insulting remark. In Monroe, Louisiana, October 22nd, Warren Eaton, a Negro who made an insulting remark to a white woman Monday, was taken from the jail here early this morning by a mob and hanged to a nearby telegraph pole. Two masked men held up the jailer with pistols, but other members of the mob made no attempt to conceal their identity. And
yeah.
again, this 100 years of lynching... This book here, you know, it's, you know, full of information.
Yeah.
You know, it's right here, letter to the editor of the Montgomery Advertiser, November 6th, 1913, and it says lynchings decline. Editor of the Advertiser, at the end of 6 months of the present year, there had been 24 cases of lynching. At the end of 10 months, the first, there had been 45 lynchings, a reduction of 4 as compared with the same period in 1912. In 10 months, as stated above, 45 persons have been put to death by mob law, a reduction of the number by 4, though small, means something in the way of a higher civilization.
Yeah.
You know.
Excuse me. Now.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you see the pattern in that? And I know a lot of people think, you know, think I'm crazy for saying this. But in most of those cases where there's someone that's lynched or something, it always involves, for men, it always is involved with a white woman that they supposedly raped, molested, attacked. You know, that's the story, the rationale behind it. And like you mentioned, the woman that was lynched for supposedly trying to poison the child. In most cases, they really didn't need a jury for it because they still had the mentality that you weren't a person. So
exactly.
we'll do what we want to do with you and go on with that situation, and we'll just go ahead and we'll celebrate it. It'll be a regular, you know, annual festivity. You got people that just, you know, like I said, I've heard stories of people being pulled off a bus just for being black and lynched. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, that this stuff is going on, but we do need to talk about it.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, it's not just, you know, Alabama, but no, we definitely, you know, need to talk about it. It needs to be brought out, and we need to be able to sit down and talk about it. And, you know, we have to have an environment in which we can discuss this civilly. you know, with the arguing and the screaming at each other or talking over each other, we'll never get anything accomplished. And we need to be able to sit down and talk about this and, you know, be able to go from there. But here's another headline here, Chicago Defender, February 31st, 1915. Negro shot dead for kissing his white girlfriend. And this is Cedar Keys, Florida, February 26th. Young Reed, Negro of Kissimmee, was shot to death by a white mob at Wednesday afternoon after he had been seen kissing a white woman named Bill Mann, with whom he had been keeping company for the past 2 years. Reed was kissing Miss Mann goodbye when he was seen by a group of white men. The men seized him, beat him unmercifully, and placed him in jail. Shortly thereafter, a lynching party was formed and Reed was shot to death. Local men of the Negro race have sworn to burn down the homes of white men living with colored women to avenge the death of Reed. But you don't hear too much about the white men living with colored women. It's interesting. But
no, it's that, Jesus, some kind of projectionism there, too, doesn't it seem? Because, like so much of their interaction with black women is rape. It's like maybe that's what they see from the other end. Like if that's what I'm doing, maybe that's got to be his mentality. You know, like it's got, maybe it's just some sort of projectionism. And that Mississippi one, we said they said the guy got depressed and lynched himself. That sounds so much like a proud, willful lie. Like that lie, it sounds like you're saying, ha ha, yeah, I did it. You know, like yeah, I had my hand in the cookie jar. I'm just going to give you the worst lie possible to rub it in your face that I did it.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that, you know, these people were not brought to justice, and this was vigilante justice. You know, they decided they were the judge, jury, and the executioner. They may have heard something. They may not have witnessed it, but they heard it. And they decided to, you know, in some cases, to pull these people out of their home and, you know, take it upon themselves to lynch them and to kill them and to hurt them. And, you know, we definitely, you know, it needs to be addressed, you know, again, especially the colonialism, you know, and how we have not, you know, decolonized in this country. It's just, wow. But, you know, in order to move forward, it's going to have to be addressed. And sometimes pulling both sides into these conversations is like pulling teeth. You know, trying to get people to, you know, talk about these things. And then also talk about it without, you know, again, the screaming and, you know, without it turning into another lynch mob right then and there. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't even know where to start. And I guess starting is, you know, having conversations like this and, you know, bringing this information out to the forefront. But, you know, until we do that, it's going to continue to be issues in this country. During the Reconstruction, the Ku Klux Klan, you know, came about. They were founded in 1866. You know, I guess they were founded officially, you know, in 1866. But, you know, they weren't only threatening to kill blacks. They were threatening to kill carpetbaggers and, you know, people of that nature. But, you know, you have these nationalist groups on both sides of the equation. And, you know, we really need to take a look at this. You know, it says here, white terrorists often made nighttime raids to African-American homes in order to confiscate firearms. Let me repeat that. White terrorists often made nighttime raids of African-American homes in order to confiscate firearms. Does any of this sound familiar? Or am I reading much into this? Am I reaching? Tell me, am I reaching?
The history is the history. It's just, I think it's so hardcore that some just really want to deny it, you know, especially like I don't want to switch off from this one, but when you go into how they, you know, we reiterated barbecuing. They're barbecuing, they are celebrating, and that's the grossest part, is the fact that they are having a good time, the fact that they smell human flesh burning, and they got a smile on their face. They're singing and dancing to this, and that's what really makes your head explode and burns your eyelashes out, that it was fun for somebody. That's where you're like, someone's brain is broken here. Or is our species really capable of that if we let a very one-sided ideology go too far? If you just let them go too far with their that domination mentality that they seem to have had as a group. But, I mean, this was probably like before they really invented whiteness, right? Like Italians, they probably weren't really considered white to them, or like you probably didn't have like Jews being treated as white yet. Well, it was probably really like what, most like Anglo, British, and what have you, like really smaller groups that just wanted to own the planet and just really own other human beings. And that it's really creepy. And to know that these people had kids and more kids and grandkids, and some of that mentality just keeps seeping down, and you see it in policies today. You turn on the television set, and you turn on C-SPAN, and you see what they're doing. Or like you look at a governor comes up, and they say, oh, yeah, slavery was great for black people. Best thing to happen to them. That's how they got Jesus and hard work. You know, like that mentality is still passed down.
Exactly. Exactly, exactly. It's horrible. But, I mean, I want you to go and look up, you know, Negro barbecue. It's important. I'll even give you a name. Look up John Porter, P-O-R-T-E-R, Jr. John Porter, Jr., and, you know, Negro barbecue. And it's just, you know, when you hear people, when you hear them say, burn them. This is where it derived from, you know. Oh. They call lynching bees and Negro barbecues. You know, understand the history. Understand where, you know, some of this comes from. I mean, it's documented. So this isn't something that, you know, we're making up. You know, this is documented history. And again, if you want to, you know, go to, you know, what's that called? eBay. I'm sorry, I meant to say that earlier. I think I said Amazon. But eBay. And look up Negro lynching postcards. You'll find some of that, you know, there. You know, I've put up a link or two about, you know, I'm showing you some of the newspaper articles or the headlines. And it's just as important for you guys to go back and, you know, read that. But, I mean, some of the people were acquitted, but they had already been lynched. So right. How do you clear and acquit someone that's already been, executed?
Right.
So,
Ken?
Go ahead.
Yes. I was going to say, and if you haven't, you should also look at Walter White.
Yes.
You know, he here in my hometown of Baltimore, they have the Blacks and Wax Museum. Mm-hmm. And if you ever go, there's and this is like one of the first times, I think, when I was younger, where I going there, where I actually realized how much I didn't know about Black history, because they don't really talk about it in school. You know, they kind of
right.
make it seem like, oh, it was kind of unfair, like you didn't get to get on the bus, you know, where you want to sit
right.
and stuff, you know what I mean? And it really made you study. But if you go to Blacks and Wax Museum, there's actually a scene that's representative of something that Walter White saw. Now, Walter White was a black man, but he was light enough to pass. And so he was able to get, you know, into situations where people didn't really know, you know, that he was in fact black. And he happened to witness this really horrific scene, which is, you know, put in wax in the museum, where this woman and I think there was a man also who were lynched. And after they had finished killing the woman, they had cut open her belly. She was pregnant. And they killed the fetus. And after killing the fetus, they actually sewed into her belly a couple of cats, and they had a bet on which cat would get out first.
Wow. That's horrible.
Yeah. So, you know, this is just how horrendous, you know,
yeah,
our history is when you really get into it, the history of blacks in this country and how they were treated, and not that long ago.
Exactly.
You know? And it's still happening in some places, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, there are still places in this country that are essentially sundown towns.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, remember what happened in Forsyth County in Georgia? They told Oprah they didn't care who she was. They didn't want her there either. Now, Forsyth County, you know, has progressed a little bit, but I still wouldn't spend a night out there. And that's in Forsyth County, Georgia, for those of you who don't, you know, aren't familiar. But, yeah, you do still have sundown towns. I mean, that's why we had the little green book. The little green books, and the green books told you which towns were friendly and which ones were not. Just, you know, zoom straight on through there. And, you know, it's horrible. So two cats into her and made bets as to which cat will get out. That is just horrible. And the thing is that, you know, again, I won't even get into that anyway. You know, this is the type of stuff that just absolutely turns my stomach. It really does. It turns my stomach.
Well, it certainly won't give you, it's certainly not meant to give you an appetite.
Right. But just the fact that, you know, they had to deal with that then, and we're still dealing with some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we cannot turn a blind eye to it. We cannot be deaf to this. You know, it has to be addressed. You know, I'm going to give you a few headlines from back then, you know, from contemporary newspapers, apparently. And it said, a wholesale lynching at Watkinsville today. And another one is, a mass mob visits death on 8 prisoners held in jail at Watkinsville. Prisoners shot down by an insatiate mob. 8 slain by mob. 8 men lynched. 8 men are shot to death by a mob. White men and 7 Negroes lynched. 1 white man and 7 Negroes lynched by Watkinsville mob. 7 Negroes and 1 white man lynched. 7 blacks and 1 white man bound and riddled with bullets. 7 Negroes and 1 white man taken from Watkinsville jail and shot to death by an angry mob. Lynching at Watkinsville, lynching in Oconee County. Feelings are intense over mob's mad work. 7 Negroes fill 1 grave. Quiet is restored in Watkinsville. Lynch condemned in strongest term. Big rewards offered for lynchers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and this is just in Watkinsville. You know, that's just one city. That's just one city.
Right.
You know, and, you know, again, you know, some of the things, and it wasn't just happening in the South. You know, I got to be fair. You know, there were lynchings happening in the North as well. And that's the reason why earlier I was talking about the women that were lynched, because, you know, I need for people to understand and to know that, you know, it didn't matter to them if you were male or female. You know, they were just, you know, just taking people out, you know. Since you're talking about, you know, women that were pregnant, you know, I want you guys to go and look up Maggie Howes, H-O-W-Z-E, M-A-G-G-I-E, H-O-W-Z-E, and Alma Howes, A-L-M-A, same last name, H-O-W-Z-E. Look that up. You know, and
and also I was going to say, Kim, because you were talking about newspapers and newspaper headlines and stuff. I mean, there are still a few black papers in circulation. I know the Baltimore Afro, you know, is still around. But, you know, if you have, like, particularly if you have a historically black college near you, And especially if it's public. Like, I know, you know, like, you can go into their libraries, and a lot of these old libraries actually have, you know, physical copies of these old newspapers in their archives.
Yes.
And you can actually see them for yourself. I know I read a couple of Chicago Defender, you know, articles when I was in college. You know?
Right. Yep.
And it's pretty sobering, you know, to remind yourself, like, just how far we've come, you know, in this country, because, you know, it wasn't that long ago.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's true. They have all of that information on microfiche. So all you have to do is ask them, and they'll set you at one of the machines there, and you can read the newspaper and, you know, tell them what you're looking for. Quite a few of the informations that we're talking about, you know, you find it on the internet. You just have to take your time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have Google Scholars and Google Books. You know, I would tell you guys, you know, I post these books and things for a reason on a wall. And I know sometimes people may say, well, why is she just posting this? You know, and I know I post a lot of information. You can't get to it all. I understand that. But I leave it up there and for you to go reference. There is a wealth of information on my wall. And, you know, we have the Tumblr page as well as the Twitter. You can find it on either one because I usually post to all three at the same time. But, you know, it's important that you guys look this information up, that we continue the dialogue and, you know, talk about these things and, you know, just move on, you know. And when I say move on, I'm not talking about forget. Don't do that, because if you forget, you know, it can happen again, you know. And just pay attention to what's happening now. There are a lot of injustices and mischaracterizations happening, you know, regarding, you know, minority communities now, even now. And interesting thing is that some of the minority communities, you know, they've, you know, projected that onto other minority communities, which is why I feel, you know, certain communities have no right to point the finger and tell other communities that they do not deserve civil rights or civil liberties, or equal rights. You know, how can you do that? Look at the history. Look at what your culture has gone through. And, you know, in good conscience, how can you do that? So, you know, we've come a long way. And we have a long way to go. And, you know, there's so much information out there that, you know, we can't necessarily get to it all in one show, and that's the reason why, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, Black history all year round. But, you know, I just wanted to talk a little bit about this. But, you know, again, go and look up Jim Crow, look up Reconstruction, look up Black codes, you know, look up the lynching. There were an estimated 5,000 lynchings in the post-Civil War period, you know, and that only occurred in the southern states, you know. Well, 85% of them occurred in the southern states. And basically it says here 1892 was a peak year when 161 African-Americans were lynched. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, in this book here, the one that I was telling you guys about earlier by Ginsberg, it has a listing, you know, on page 94. And it says here, 1865, 184 lynchings, 1886, 138, you know, 1892, 205, 1893, 200. So, you know, and I'm not even sure if these numbers are accurate. I'm sure it's more than this. But, you know, they tried to keep somewhat of a tally. And, you know, and this is only showing 30 years. No, it's showing a little bit more than 30 years here. But, you know, just look it up. Go read it for yourselves. Find out what's happening. You got this one here, 5 hanged on 1 oak tree. And I remember seeing this picture, you know, down in Gainesville, Florida, August 19th. 5 Negroes, 3 men and 2 women, were taken from the jail in Newberry, Florida, early today and hanged by a mob. And another Negro was shot and killed by deputy sheriffs near Jonesville, Florida, as a result of the killing yesterday of Constable S.G. Wynn and the shooting of Dr. L.G. Harris by Boise Long, a Negro. The lynched Negroes were accused of aiding Long to escape. The majority of these people were not brought to justice. But yet, you know, we're told to just, you know, we're told to just accept this and to move on and to get over it. Don't ever forget this and don't allow anyone else to forget it again. You know, no one is asking victims of the Holocaust to forget. You know, no one's telling them to just get over it and move on. You know, 9/11, we're fighting two wars allegedly because of 9/11. You know, let someone tell, you know, white Americans to get over that and watch what happens. So, you know, it's interesting. It's just, it's important, extremely important that, you know, we put this information out there. We go back and we tell history, the correct history, and not this revisionist history. Because, you know, people have a tendency to go back and revise history. But I want you guys definitely to go out and look up Knight Rider. Because, you know, again, those were the Klansmen and all of them that used to terrorize the black neighborhood. And now, you know, just thinking about it, I'm going to have to look it up and do some research on it. But, you know, anyway, Knight Rider. Knight Rider, that's going to provide another show. I think it's going to provide another show for us. But, you know, again, let me see here. I'm going to post the picture. Whoops, I'm on the wrong computer. I'm on my Mac. If you could find this for me, Alfred.
What's it called?
Sorry, William, and post it. It says Postcard of Lynched Jesse Washington. Postcard of the Lynched Jesse Washington. Post that up.
Actually, you know what, Kim? I think there's another website they can go to, too. I'll post it on your wall. It has a lot of pictures.
Yes.
Like, it has pictures, postcards, like, everything. And I'll post it on the Black Freethinkers wall.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because, you know, because I've posted a couple of links, and, you know, I have, you know, quite a few links. But, you know, as you need to look, you know, and they turned it into a party. They turned it into a party. It's just, it's up to us. And that's right, Judy, it is up to us. It's up to us to get out of here. But again, where are our activists? You know, where are the people that are willing to stand up? You know, I know, you know, a few of us are out here. But again, we can't do it by ourselves. Trying to go back into the community and, you know, make some inroads into the community and try to heal the community and try to bring industry and everything to the communities is going to take more than two or three people. We need your help. We need your intellect. We need your physical bodies because we're going to need some help to do these things. And then also, you know, financial resources. You know, again, this stuff isn't free. But, you know, we need to get together and figure it out because people were scapegoated then and people are scapegoated now, you know, and it needs to be addressed. But, again, it's documented, you know, quite a bit of this is documented. Again, if you want to go on eBay and look up Lynch postcards or Negro postcards, you know, they have some of the newspapers, you know, you can buy all of that stuff on eBay. But definitely look up that book, Without Sanctuary. I posted it in the room, but I'm pulling it off my shelf again. Without Sanctuary, Lynching Photography in America. It's an expensive book, but it's a very thick, heavy book, and it's a hardback. But, you know, so just let you know. And the other book is 100 Years of Lynchings by Ralph Ginsberg. Another really, really good book. Do some research on Negro barbecue so that you all will understand, you know, where that came from and, you know, how they used to burn black people. And look up Knight Riders. I want you to definitely look up that. Look up Black Wall Street. Look up Tulsa. Look up Orangeburg. Look all of that information up. Jesse Binga, you know, look that up. You know, again, you know, many of these people rose from poverty to wealth. And, you know, there was some jealousy there. And, you know, definitely, you know, they wanted to take it away. So in order for us to not, you know, backtrack or regress back into this, it's important that we understand what happened. And, again, knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. You need to know where we came from, what happened, and, you know, to make sure that we never revisit it. You know, make sure we never, never revisit those days, but never forget. Don't allow anyone to tell you that we live in a post-racial society. That's a lie. We do not live in a post-racial society. Racism is not dead. We still have institutionalized racism that needs to be addressed as well. And, you know, go ahead, dear.
Oh, no, you live in a post-racial society when you don't have to say it. As long
exactly.
as it's relevant to be said, then it's current.
Exactly. You know, and even though you have people out here saying that your vote doesn't count, I don't agree with that. You know, there is power in your vote, and we do need to become more politically active, because the way that I see it is if they're not, you know, advancing our cause, then vote them out. And that's another reason why I say we need to put together an agenda and present it to Barack Obama. A lot of people are saying he's in a lame duck presidency. Not necessarily. He can still affect change. So it's just as important that, you know, we start exercising our rights there and getting out here and start marching and protesting again and then taking our money. You know, it's over $1 trillion spending power we have. We need to reinvest that back into our own communities. I've been saying this for a while, you know, and, you know, hopefully we are past the point where we will have lynch mobs coming in and trying to destroy, you know, wealth and success, you know, achieved in our communities. Hopefully we're beyond that, but we don't know until we do it. So, you know, the whole thing is interesting, but I want you guys to go and look this information up. Never forget. Don't ever forget. And what we had to go through and what our ancestors had to deal with. But are you posting these links to your wall on Father Teresa's wall?
I got some. I went to Father Teresa, the barber shop, and I think I hit your wall again. I don't know why I end up doing that. I don't know how I end up posting one. I think I might have one on your wall too.
Okay, very good, because someone was asking. So you can go to the barbershop wall, Father Teresa, and those of you who know me, you know after the show I'm going to hit my wall pretty hard. So, you know, that information should be there. And again, next week we're going to be talking about the Day of Solidarity. We'll have, you know, Donald Wright on the show, and we'll do the official launch and kickoff for the Day of Solidarity. But we'll also be talking about, you know, Africans in America, not necessarily in the United States here, but, you know, we'll be talking about Latin America, South America. We'll be talking about that, but also Cuba, the Dominican, Portugal. We'll be talking about the Africans in Brazil. We'll talk about all of that because, you know, it seems to be some issues happening in Los Angeles. It's not just happening there. I've seen that this in other places as well. And, you know, if you want to get a jump start, you know, go and look up La Raza, L-A, and then the second word, R-A-Z-A, La Raza, in, or La Raca, L-A, and the second word, R-A-C-A. And look up those words with African-American and racial tension. Just so you can kind of get a jump on that and kind of see where I'm coming from next week. I'm going to, that's only going to be a small portion of it, but I think it's important that we look that up and kind of have an understanding. And on that note, again, everybody, I thank you. And February 24th, Sunday, February 24th, 2013, that is the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers, which is inclusive. So this is for all nonbelievers. And again, whether you have a large group or whether you have a small group, we encourage you guys to get together and, you know, whether it's for a celebration, whereas you're having a large gathering, or if it's just a couple of people getting together to have tea, or if you decide to make it a family day, you and your family get together and spend some time with one another. You can send us your leftimonials. You can send us pictures. Send us the information, so if you want others to join you, we can put the information up on a website and everybody will be able to find you and we can go from there. But until then, much love. Thank you for the support. I appreciate you guys. Tuesday, the barbershop. Friday, Mario's show, the barbershop. They'll be talking about sociopathy this Tuesday. And Mario will be talking about the problems or the issues in atheism, which should prove to be a very interesting show. So that's the lineup for this week. Next Sunday, I'll be talking about Africans in America. America's with an S, and the Day of Solidarity. And until then, take care, everybody. Much love.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thought, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire with lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday, I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black precinct, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by faith in a lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe.